Thank you, William. And I'd like to welcome you to the state of Minnesota. I am with the Minnesota Department of Agriculture, and we have used the CAP studies to gather information from producers and landowners. What is a CAP study and why would we use it? Well, we kind of fit into this session because it is a producer survey results. And we also know that when we're working on water quality issues, which many in Minnesota are now engaged in, that unlike some of the presentations you've just seen where you can see results over a season, in water quality work, it often takes a decade to actually see the physical changes. So our attempt here in the program was to see what the social measures were and what kind of impact this program had upon the community. So what is a CAP study? It is a long-held survey that measures the knowledge, attitudes, and practices of either an individual or a community itself. It, the social research method, the survey that measures the change in human knowledge, attitude, and practices over time. It also identifies what the barriers and constraints are that limit people's changes in their behavior, and measuring changes in the knowledge, attitude, and practices are minimum values for evaluating outcomes on audiences. So the survey will collect data for planning, identifying engagement strategies, and the educational messages. It is designed for education and outreach activities. As we said before, it measures attitudes, identifies the constraints. The CAP study is done twice during a process for a pre and post project. It's a flexible process that's customized and scalable for whatever group you are surveying, and it's very inexpensive. So the project we used this on was the Minnesota Water Quality Certification Program. This is a voluntary program that accelerates the implementation of conservation practices here in Minnesota. We have approved farm management practices that are evaluated to be certified, and it turns regulatory in return for the practices the producer does on its field. The state gives regulatory certainty to those producers for a period of 10 years. It's a statewide program, and it's a private-public partnership. It also has recently received the NRCS Regional Conservation Partnership Program, so we have a lot of attention on this program, both within the state as well as nationally. So what can we measure? We can measure the number of farms that are certified. Well, at this point, we've been at it for a year and a half in the pilot phase. Depending on who is looking, is 66 producers a lot, or does it fall below what the expectations would be? You can measure the certified acres. You can measure the number of conservation practices that would not have occurred but for this program. We can measure what kind of interest we have by the number of applicants that have signed up. And we also need to measure what kind of social change has occurred because of this program. So we started this a year and a half ago with four pilot projects. Each pilot area convened an advisory committee that developed the local questions. So what do we know? What don't we know? What do we want to know? And who do we want to know it from? So each questionnaire in the four different regions were adapted to the region, and probably like your states, you may have different populations, you might have different farming practices within your state or within the regional area, and those dictate what the questions might be. We are very pleased statewide. We sent out almost 1,500 surveys and got close to 500 back, so a 33% response rate, and we were glad about that. And the surveys went out to both producers as well as landowners. Some are the same folks, some, you know, would not be, and took a look at the results. So what did we find out? Well, that half the people report anyway that their operation, they don't know if their operation contributed to water quality or pollution with within their watershed, and a third of those said that they were uncertain. Many producers said soil erosion was a concern, but few said water quality was the first concern. Soil loss, money, yield, time are all important factors for producers. They identified differences in nitrogen fertilizer management techniques within their watershed. And no surprise to any of us, but barriers were potential cost, need to know more information. They were concerned about reducing acres to do a conservation practices. And again, I think it rings true, the incentives include cost share, more education, and more technical assistance was always most important. So as we do have three watersheds, as I had explained, and this is the Whitewater watershed in the southeast. Highly rolling hills, a lot of conservation practices already involved, and there's a strong personal responsibility for improving the water quality among the respondents, which was also very interesting because they probably are the region that sees the most immediate impact on their farming practices to the water quality because of the hills in the karst region. Water quality is the most frequently reported factor in ag decision making. Major constraints, again, were lack of cost share and lack of knowledge. And there was a strong potential here to work with those producers. The Whiskey Creek is in western Minnesota, flat, highly agricultural, and this is in the Red River Valley. Owner-operators have higher knowledge and practice scores than those renting lands to others. So this is where we saw a very definite difference between those that own the land but do not rent it, that do not work it, to those that are owners and operators. So it's to say that the owners of the land are not really paying attention as they rent out their land to others. Knowledge scores are rather low for both groups, suggesting that there's some education and outreach that could occur. There was rather low interest and engagement in water quality programs. Again, this is the flat Red River Valley area, and water quantity was what rose to the top. And again, producers with response to cost share, education, training, and specific practices and technical assistance. And then the Middle Stock watershed, middle of the state, sandy soils, highly agriculture, generally low scores on water quality, knowledge questions, lack of awareness of the pollutants and their practices. Water quality was not a big factor in their ag decision making, but soil erosion was. And similarly, cost share, education, and financial assistance. So you may have heard while you were here that Minnesota has the Land and Water Legacy Amendment. So there is a huge amount of public resources going to water quality at this point. It's $85 million that's collected by state taxpayers annually, and it's for 25 years. So you know that there is a wide range of folks looking at the multiple programs that are funded by this money, and depending on who that person is, what they want, what they're looking for. So it's really the intersection of politics and policy and practice. So what will be our messaging as we go forward, and this program did start statewide in July, is we continue to focus on the profitability and cost savings of best management practices. We will, in our messaging, will be linking soil erosion to water quality and focus on soil loss, the productivity, or lack of it when the soil is lost, and farm legacy, that was identified by numerous respondents. We'll connect the individual practices to soil loss and water quality and focus on filling the knowledge gap, increase awareness of water quality issues specific to each of the watersheds. And our next steps, we have a better understanding of the knowledge gap that needs to be addressed. We can identify the range of practices that are currently being used. We can contact the respondents who self-identified who might be interested in this program. We are conducting a second round in the spring of 2016, which would be two years later from our first survey, to see if any of the knowledge, the attitudes, or practices have changed it. And we're contributing to the social measurement at the state level. So again, back to the Clean Water Legacy Amendment that we have. There are 18 measures that the state is gathering, and social measures is one of them. So each of the state agencies has a project similar to ours where they're measuring social impact. So thank you very much, and I'd take any questions.
We've got time for a couple of questions.
Sarah. Oh, how did that happen? Well, I think there, in 2008, it was put on a ballot, and we, let's see, do I have a, I wonder if I even have a logo. It's on the brochure. It connected outdoors, heritage, arts and culture, and water quality. So it was a grand coalition. I have also been told that part of it was the possible challenge of regulating agriculture, and so this was a way that folk, and actually this program is a way to recognize producers who are doing the best management practices and protecting water quality issues. Than protecting water quality to be able to prove that their work is protecting. So, and I just see we've had a visitor here from the University of Minnesota. Welcome. We're talking about the Legacy Amendment, and they wondered how it happened. So, it was quite the confluence of a number of different groups, and it happened. So yes, it's for 25 years. And as I said, a lot of eyes that are on it to make sure that the funds go directly to the land. They're not duplicating anything that's already been out there or supplanting any other projects that may have been previously funded, and that there is rigorous evaluation of what's happening. Yes?
How does this work on rented land? Is it the renter who applies for certification or the landowner?
Well, this is something that we found out very clearly when we did the survey. Whoever the producer is, if they have rented or owned land, it's every field and every crop is the practices are evaluated. If they reach a certain, an 8.5, then they have committed that they will do X, Y, and Z over the course of the next 10 years. So it's either renter, and actually the early advisory committee that formed this program said it was producer, so the certification went with the producer. Well, through the surveys, we found that many of the landowners, oftentimes not working the land at all, wanted to use this as a way to assure that their land was farmed in a sustainable way. So we are now working with some landowners who are saying, who through this, the certification process, say, if you are going to rent my land, you will do X, Y, and Z on this field when you plant corn, and you will do such and such. So basically, the certification records go along with the rental agreement. And there's been great interest among landowners to be able to work with us this way. Well, thank you. I would just say because of our our NRCS RCPP proposal, we are testing this for not only within the state but also nationally. So please keep posted, and I'd be happy to answer any more questions throughout the year. Thank you very much.
Thank you.